Thanks for listening to this episode of Oikos Stories. What if there was a magic formula for your ministry? Well, unfortunately, there isn't. Today, in my conversation with Pastor Tim Cool, the lead pastor of Hill Country Bible Church in Austin, Texas, we talk about this idea, how the Oikos principle is often mistaken as some formula or framework for success in ministry. I really appreciate Tim's perspective on this because he has been deep in the world of Oikos, and his insights really do reveal some of the common tensions that many leaders face as they first encounter the Oikos principle, but then also as they implement it into their ministries. But I'll let Tim tell you all about that. Enjoy this conversation with Pastor Tim Cool. Tim, thanks so much for taking some time to talk about Oikos. Always start these conversations in the same spot. I'd love to know, tell us a little bit about the first time that you heard about Oikos.
Yeah, I was a youth pastor, and I began working at a church where Oikos was the guiding principle. And so I kind of stepped into an operating system where it was the clear North Star. A lot of things were already arranged to it, which allowed me a really fast on-ramp to understand the principle and see how the principle would work in practice as well.
So when you were kind of stepping into that role, did you know that that's what you were getting into? Or was it a little bit more of like you show up and then it's like, oh, so this is how we're doing things?
I am sure that they talked about it in the onboarding process. However, no, I did not. I did not understand. And so for me, it was definitely a chance to play catch up. But at the time, I loved student ministry. I thought I was going to be a lifer. You know, I'll never be too old to do this. Or too tired to do this, or not cool enough to do this. And so my job was to figure out not just what it was, but how a youth ministry was going to be oikocentric, how it was going to embrace the concept. And I'm really glad that I didn't know what it was stepping in. And I'm really glad I was a youth pastor doing it because I didn't realize how oikocentric I already was. Yeah. I liked student ministry because it was not programmatic. It was relational. You know, a student ministry in a church is smaller. You can wrap your arms around it. And so I liked being a youth pastor because I was relationally connected to my kids. And I loved how relationally connected my kids were in their real world. They didn't love school, but they liked being with their friends. It's not even that they loved sports, that they liked being on a team, right? And what that meant is that students were oikocentric for football. They were oikocentric for band. And to teach students that oikos was a way to be influential for Jesus was, I think, a really easy on-ramp. So I loved the stage of life I was in when I learned about oikos.
Yeah, that's great. The like formal question on my list is what's compelling about the principle, but it sounds like what was compelling is how naturally it aligned with your already existing values. Is that fair?
Yeah. So I remember growing up in a church that was very much Bible, 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 but the speakers that would come in that resonated with me were the ones who wanted to reach the lost. I was in a church that was very not stuffy. That's unfair. But I mean, it was like men wearing sports coats and choir robes on stage. And then Tony Campolo came and spoke. And he was an off-speed pitch for us. Mm-hmm. And I remember him saying on stage in my church, 80% of the world's going to hell and 80% of you don't give a damn. And you guys are more upset about the second thing I said than the first thing I said.
Wow.
And, you know, it's a little bit of a shock jock approach for sure. And I don't choose to say things like that. But I remember, though, that resonating with me that 80% of the world's going to hell and 80% of you don't give a damn. And you're upset about that phrase than the first one. And for whatever reason, that stuck with me. And so when I got to Oikos, it wasn't a shock jock moment in church that developed a heart for it. Mm-hmm. It was a pastoral approach. So what was compelling to me is it changed evangelism from shaking people to be frustrated enough that they would finally care to shepherding people so that they could care. I remember doing a lot of mission trips. And on a mission trip, you're starting from scratch, which means that your defense of the gospel starts in logic, not in relationship. And Oikos allows the gospel to start in relationship, not here. It turns it from argumentative to polemic. I love the Oikos principle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great shift. And that's a kind of a profound moment of contrast that that was happening in life to hear that kind of called out that clearly, because intellectually, I grew up in church as well. And so intellectually, I understood those numbers, but that the understanding of numbers wasn't always an activator, at least enough of an activator to kind of cause me or lead me to engage my world as meaningfully as I could. And so, what a contrast to have that come into the pulpit of, a church.
Yeah. Yeah. He didn't come back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a one and done. And that was all he needed to do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's great. So as you're going through the process now, you're kind of acclimating or sort of seeing this play out. Mm-hmm. Was there anything any doubts, I guess, that surfaced, or any uncertainties about this principle in terms of application and ministry and seeing what you were seeing?
Yeah. You know, what's funny is early on, no, I was thrilled. Again, it made so much sense about why I loved student ministry. It was almost like, whoa, there's adults that love ministry in the same way I love it. That's awesome. But now 25 years later, well, with the Oikos principle 20 years later, there is just something in, I don't know if it's American church or global church. There's something that wants to turn everything into a formula, because formulas are easier. They're dependable. And I think the reservation is that Oikos can be a punch card, where it's almost like it can be multi-level marketing. Hmm. Well, great. I've got my 8 to 15, and if I can get mine and they can get theirs, boom, explosive movement, blah, blah, blah. Nothing about the gospel can ever be multi-level marketing. It doesn't work. And at its heart, Oikos is gospel, it's relational, it's incarnational ministry, it is the disciples moving and reaching. But when we turn Oikos into multi-level marketing, which there is just a propensity to do, then Oikos isn't beautiful anymore. It's not organic, it's not first century church. And so my reservations now 20 years down the line is that we don't turn it into a formula, it's a principle. And when it's healthy, it is a movement. But it's not multi-level marketing. And so my fear is that if I don't communicate it well and I'm not modeling it well, then I could kind of turn my Oikos card, my Oikos list, into a task list, and then to make sure that task list gets multiplied, 13x.
Yeah, that's a great concern, I think, in the sense that a lot of times when people first hear about the Oikos principle, that is their concern, is that it is only that, or it is simplified down to that level to just be this, kind of mindless operational program or formula, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, what are some things, as you're kind of implementing this throughout your ministry, what are some things that you're doing to try to avoid that being the way people receive it?
Connect heart to stories about Oikos. I try and remember something that I've done in my life or someone has done in their real life and talk about the affection of it, or like the beauty in it, the grace in it, the humility, because there's quantitative data and there's qualitative data. And I think as I'm championing a strategy, if I can attach qualitative stories to it, that's what's in my head right now. And who knows, I might screw it up and might accidentally wind up turning this into multi-level marketing in the minds of other people. But for an approach, I try and actually embody it. And then I try and inject heart when I'm communicating on a stage.
Yeah, I love that it starts with embracing it. That's one of the things in all of the different conversations I've had, both on staff, pursuing the same thing. How do we make communications oikocentric? that challenge, it really did start with the same kind of root problem of we have to be doing this. We can't just be selling this to other people. We can't just be trying to convince other people that it's valuable. They need to see it actually happening in our lives. And I think in some cases, where we struggled over the years is when it wasn't present in our life. And so it really is one of those things that try it and see how God works through it. And then all of a sudden you'll begin to see, in practical terms, how this works in the implementation beyond yourself. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. Well, and I try and really think through, I'm going to say it fast because it's a podcast and it's not a sermon, but how I describe the successes and how I describe the failures. One, I think it's really helpful for people in my church to learn that when I'm in my neighborhood or at my grocery store, I'm just a person. I'm not Pastor Tim at HEB. And for those of you who don't know, I'm in the great state of Texas, and HEB is God's chosen grocery store. But my point is there, I think it's really helpful and really healthy for people in my church to hear, wow, sometimes Tim tries to share his faith, invite people to the gospel or to church, and they say, no, thank you. Oh, okay, I'm not a spiritual failure, and I'm not going to abdicate that responsibility to Tim because that's his world too. But then on the success side, the flip side, to not say, transactionally, I got a person to church or I got a person to make a decision, because then that leans back to that transactional nature. I try and think through something that is, what's a healthy way to describe my relationship with the person that said no thank you or that said yes? Because even how I describe my personal, it can still default to a fail or a win in a really binary, they didn't come to church, they didn't come to Jesus. So I think being thoughtful in how you describe that is important as well.
Yeah. Yeah. There's such a, you know, when you look at the Oikos card, invest is such a big piece of that. Mm-hmm. And when you give that context of how investment has happened, it helps mm-hmm. kind of broaden the story. The story isn't just that moment. It's not just that decision, the yes or a no to come to church. The faithfulness in the sense is, the years of investment. You know, I think my mom's been praying for a friend of hers for 20 years. She hasn't come mm-hmm. to church. It's still an example of faithfulness to me.
Yeah.
She doesn't even have to quote unquote win in order for that to still be something that's been impactful for me in my own life. And so, yeah, I love that kind of zooming out a little bit and focusing not just on that kind of just the singular moment, but going mm-hmm. broader than that. That's good. Yeah. So as you're kind of implementing this and kind of working this or maybe introducing this into your ministry, what are some of the things that you've been seeing? Like, are you seeing people embrace it? Are you seeing resistance? You know, what does that kind of process look like of bringing that in?
Yeah, I'm tremendously fortunate. I am the lead pastor at a new church for me, just under 3 years in this role. And it is such a dominating principle that it would be hard for a new pastor to say, hey, we have a new identity. I'm fortunate that our church, our mission statement is saturating Greater Austin with the love of Jesus. So that's already very parallel with what Oikos is. Oikos is a means to that end. It's the healthiest approach, I think, to that end. And so it has been an easier transition for us. I think two levels, we've seen some success. Our staff is excited that they understand a target audience. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is we like to celebrate baptisms on a Sunday morning in a church service. And what we do is we'll do a baptism class with those candidates and we'll say, hey, baptism is a couple things. One, it's obedience to Jesus. Two, it is a picture of your salvation, not your salvation. And number three, it's a great Oikos moment in your life. And our staff has sat in on those classes and they said, oh, baptism is a great Oikos moment for us in our church programming. We're going to set aside a section of seats so that baptism candidates and their friends have the best view of their baptism. They're not going to be in the back of the room. They're not going to be on a side wing. They're going to be right up front so that they're really close to that very emotional decision that someone's made to be baptized. Their Oikos is very near that spot. As a matter of fact, we've got like guest signs that help be like, is your friend getting baptized today? Come sit with them here. So our staff has latched on in some really functional ways. And our elders have really latched on that they understand that our primary audience in Greater Austin is our church's Oikos. Mm. And we also plant churches further away from us because there's Oikos that we're really not connected to. And that's why we plant churches in Austin. So it's been very framing. Ministry can be overwhelming. One, because people are critical of every darn thing you do. But number two, everything could kind of be a good idea. Should we fire up a ministry for retired firefighters who love service animals? Yeah, I guess, because that's going to reach the lost. Oikos frames with some intentionality and priority what you do. So it's helped our staff with how we frame our ministry, and it's helped frame our elders on what's our primary audience that we're going after.
I love it. I love how practical it takes something, because reaching Greater Austin, I mean, that's a big ambition.
It is.
It's kind of, it's like vaguely great in the sense
right.
of like,
yes.
but how though, you know, like,
yeah.
And what I love is that, you know, cause I think about that from more of like the operational side. Okay. So I'm walking into work, sitting down at my desk. All right. We're supposed to reach Greater Austin today. All right. What do I do?
Yeah.
Today?
Where do I start?
Yeah. And to see how this really ambitious mission, which is a great mission, but Oikos gives it a structure that allows you to now work toward the accomplishment of it. And I love that is both on the kind of the high level, just sort of, I get it. I know how we're doing this. I can see a mechanism that helps us accomplish that vision.
Yeah.
But then the practical decision of, wait a minute, let's reserve some seats over here, because this will be a great benefit to the oikocentric ministry happening in the lives of the people who invited another person, you know what I mean? Like, that's great. I love how it kind of lives at both of those tiers. That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So in terms of somebody who's, you know, a lot of the kind of the audience for this is the person who's heard about it, considering what, you know, Oikos, and I think these stories of different church leaders and kind of their own wrestling and working through the Oikos principle, but then sort of the beginning of implementation in their ministry, it sort of leads to this question of like, what would you say to somebody who's just learning about the Oikos principle?
Yeah. So I'll get pushy because I have the luxury of signing off this podcast and getting right back to what I'm working on this week. Oikos is a very healthy operating system. It's an overwhelming bolt-on. If you're trying to do everything else and do Oikos, it's like, man, how am I always equipping my people to reach their world? It's like, man, that's a lot. Just in a similar way that you pointed out, wow, our mission is to saturate Greater Austin. If I come into work going, how the heck am I going to reach Austin this week? That's going to suffocate me. I mean, we just, in our context, whenever you're watching this, we just finished Easter. And if I thought my Easter services needed this year to reach Austin, my staff would have all quit because we would have had to just stay open for capacity's sake. Well, in a similar way, if you're thinking, I've got to run men's, women's, or whatever our Bible study methods is, we're got to do global and also do Oikos. The 24/7 nature of what Oikos is going to drown it all out. For us, we try to continually talk about, it's a principle that in the same way our people are mindful that they're in their world for a reason, great. We're opening our doors for a reason. We don't have to do everything. We just know why we're doing what we're doing. And so I would say this, that it needs to be an operating system, not a software package, for it to be healthy. Yeah. And then if it's healthy, if it's an operating system, avoid that it is your transactional operating system. It's your purpose. It's your Simon Sinek. It's your why. It's your 1,000-mile march if you're Jim Collins or whatever, you know, these three, like it's the long haul, man. And so therefore it can be healthy for you. It can be affectionate, not transactional. It can be value, not metrics. And when you can hold yourself as a pastor to a value system, then you excuse yourself from needing to win prom king every single Sunday based on an attendance count. That's a sucky game to play. And it turns church into business, and it turns, you know, evangelism into market share. And man, that's a rough way to do ministry. Oikos is upward. It's externally focused. It's a big calling, but it's a value system. And I don't feel crushed by Oikos. I feel motivated. So that's what I would say.
I love it. And I, you know, from the other side, the not on on the pulpit or at, you know, behind the pulpit side, the ability to embrace oikos is something mm-hmm. for me that was massively freeing early in my yeah. life. And it dismantles the complexity of the call to change the world. And instead mm-hmm. it makes it to call the call to change my world. And
yeah.
that's something that I can lean into your vision for and say,
yeah,
let's do this. And I think that's a beautiful thing. So
yeah,
that's great. Tim, great conversation. Really appreciate you sharing your thoughts and your, even kind of the process of you, you know, kind of learning, being exposed to, and then implementing really good insights about how oikos fits in the life of a church. So thank you so much for taking time to share that with us.
Yeah, of course. God bless you guys all. As you're doing the work you're doing, I'm sure you're crushing it. And it might feel like it's crushing you, but man, God is good and you're faithful and God will be praised.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Oikos Stories. The Oikos principle isn't a formula that solves all of our ministry problems, but it gives great language, great clarity, and great context to the relationships that God has given each one of us, those of us on church staff, and those of us in our congregations. If you have any questions about the Oikos principle in your ministry, reach out at oikosmovement.com.